ain't got more than two stops. Two and after the situation, two shots. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Living heaven, fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
To Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program. From a cultural perspective, we find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge, but we as a people will turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. All thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live audio at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream. At that location, you can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream playing there also. We're streaming at abibitumi.com. That's abibitumi.com/timeforanawakening. They stream out of Ghana. Or you can download the TuneIn Radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn Radio is a free radio app. In that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening media is also there. Always full of the latest podcasts of various programs on Time for an Awakening, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace in our partnership with the Abibitumi. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening media. It's 8:08 on this Friday evening in the city of Philadelphia. It's Friday, March the 8th evening in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in open Freestyle Friday, open forum. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. We'll talk about it, and you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies, everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:13 here on this Friday edition of Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum. Here in Philadelphia, 7th and R Street, Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing a whole lot better than last few weeks. Things are getting better, and I'm glad to, you know, we're back here on Friday to hear, you know, what people might have on their mind.
Richard, a few things going on. I mean, you see that what's happening here in the city of Philadelphia with the shootings at some of these high schools here, and violence is off the hook. I don't care whether it's in cities across this country, it's violence. We have to do something as a people about this, and depending on solutions from white folks, it's not going to happen. And it's going to take leadership to do it. and the leadership we have is not looking for the proper solutions in my mind. They're just not.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's structural now. Yeah, I mean, even cultural. One thing I do say, Elliot, I just don't feel that they give us, the public, enough information of in relationship. They project the incident, but not the cause. And I'm looking at the press and even the commentators, the whole thing is about young people and violence. And we've seen, even since the new mayor came in, legislation that's going to deal with public safety. But what is it that changes the structural reality of the next generation and the cultural matrix? That is up to us.
Yeah, well, Richard, the struggle continues on what we have to do. Hold on a second, Richard. I was printing this thing out here and I just want to get it straight. Richard, we see that when I was a young man, a little boy, my parents used to take me and my older brother when we would get an opportunity, we'd go to circus. And at that time, it was the Ringling Brothers. And they entitled it, their moniker was the greatest show on earth. Mm. In my opinion, Europeans love the show.
Mm-hmm.
And last night was another show. I don't know whether it was the greatest on earth, but it was a show talking about issues. And generally, just like Malcolm said, Du Bois came to the conclusion, just like they said in the declaration of the 72 convention about the American democracy and their intentions towards black people. Because if you notice yesterday in that address, Richard, they really didn't stress on any issues that affect directly black people. They talked about general issues. In fact, their theme was immigration, it was abortion, and it was the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just dealing with it generally.
Right.
Now, in order for the Democratic Party to win, they need the black vote. That's clear. I mean, you've heard other people to mention other things on some of the news programs, but the black vote is the key factor.
Right.
But these things are not, issues that directly affect the life of black people is not being addressed. And they don't intend to address them. They just intend to talk around these issues and generally, use a trickle-down type of theory. If it happens to whites, it'll eventually get to you.
Right.
I mean, they don't say that, but that's what's meant.
I definitely see that. I didn't listen to all of it. I kind of got turned off. But one thing, as you said, that struck me is that, and, you know, he threw out some numbers or numbers amount of housing or numbers amount of people who school loan and whatever. But as you say, how many of those black folks will benefit from those? And then what group of black folks? I think that's maybe, we have a stratification, and a lot of black folks are living at the lower end. So who's going to buy these houses?
Yeah, talking about the new housing starts and things of that nature. Yeah, and if you notice the monicum, and I'm not even talking about the Republicans, because their monicum basically is as a party of rich elite whites and blacks that think that they reach that status. So I'm not even discussing that is out of the question. But the monicum for the Democratic Party is the party of the middle class. They say it all the time.
Right.
But according to the numbers, I'm going to read some of these off, but I'm not going to do it right now, but I'm going to read some of these off as far, as the conversation moves forward. that most of our people don't necessarily fall into that bracket.
Right.
And that's according to statistics. So, you know, who are they addressing when they're talking about the middle class? In my opinion, Richard, I think. Say that again. I'm sorry.
Who they better be addressing when they talk about the middle class.
But that's the thing. In my opinion, the middle class that they're addressing is the middle class that Roosevelt started when they kind of restructured things here in this country and created a middle class for whites, because they seen that some of these whites were getting off the hook. They were in these cities with all kind of gang violence going on. They had a lower strata of life. You had like a 1 or 2% whites that had a lot of money, and the rest of the whites didn't have nothing, or they was working poor. And they knew that that wasn't going to work for them. So they started things to lift their people up out of that state and created a middle class.
Right.
And that's who they're addressing. That's who he's addressing. And when this other party talks, they're addressing that same group of people. And they just use black people, like Malcolm said, as a political football.
Mm.
The ones that benefit, basically, is some of the ones that you see that of a certain class of black folks.
Right.
And that's the danger, because they don't help the masses of the people. I think Kwame Ture says in one clip that they use black people every step of the way. If you remember that clip that Kwame Ture does.
Oh, yeah.
And that voice, montage that I play sometimes. Richard, it's a couple of things here that I want to address, and we got plans to have some interesting guests on Sunday. Hopefully I'll get them confirmed, and then we'll move forward for this Sunday's program. But before I play some of the clips, two clips I want to mention. I was listening to a lot of that stuff, and I had to stop to watch some paint dry, because I think that was more important than watching that stuff. I'd rather watch paint dry.
Wait a minute. You said you had to watch. You had to watch. They got to watch the paint dry.
But it's a couple of things he said near the end I want to play for the listening audience, just to kind of critique it, so to speak.
Mm.
Because, you know, one of it I thought was insulting. I mean, I don't even worry about the whites clapping, but you had blacks get up and start clapping, black elected officials. I'll play that. But first I want to play, because if you remember, we talked about a month ago when over 1,000 pastors across the country, black pastors, signed a proclamation or agreement to step to Biden about this war, and that they wanted a permanent ceasefire. They had that commemoration dinner in Atlanta, because over 200 pastors just out of the Atlanta or the Georgia area had signed that petition, so they wanted to recognize them. And that's when they reached out to Muslim groups who was present, and they reached out to the AJC, the Jewish Coalition, and they didn't come and said that they didn't know nothing about it. But I want to play a clip that was on the news with, I think that's the World News, with Lester Holt. The young black girl was interviewing one of the pastor that was there. In fact, I've been saying I was going to reach out to him. I intend to get them on, because I want to get there. I want to hear, let the listening audience hear from their words, why they signed this agreement, why they think it's important. But I just want to play a clip there to a listening audience to the interchange there, to what she said to him, the explanation he gave. And then they talked to a couple of people in the church. And they, you notice, Richard, when they do this and interview our people, they always go to one extreme to the next.
Mm.
And I want you to hear the two extremes that they picked out specifically for this interview. And what it said, I'm playing it for the listening audience here. If I can find this thing, hold on a second. Here it is.
For a community church in Atlanta, The war raging thousands of miles away in the Middle East is top of mind.
All Palestinians are not terrorists.
Reverend Timothy McDonald III says it's because he empathizes with the thousands of civilians killed in Gaza.
Black people understand pain. We have a history of pain.
McDonald is part of a group of more than 1,000 black faith leaders demanding President Biden call for a permanent ceasefire between Israel and Hamas.
Why are you publicly calling for President Biden to demand a ceasefire?
Because the time is now. Peace is the way. And the ceasefire is a concrete beginning for the pursuit of peace because it involves both sides.
The president, while still supporting Israel, is currently pushing for a temporary ceasefire. He is hoping to get hostages out of Gaza and more aid in.
The response of the IDF has gone way too far. The killing of innocent women and children, even babies. The longer this war has gone on, the more support President Biden is losing among the African-American population.
Young black voters in particular, like Reverend Sean Smith, say they have grown frustrated with Biden over the war.
Do you think the Biden administration and President Biden understands the depth that this could impact him?
I hope he does, simply because of the fact that we want to make sure that we can get as much voter turnout as possible in November. And a lot of people who I know of personally is just saying that they're just going to stay home.
And do what?
Not vote.
Something he says Biden can't afford.
Young black people gave Joe Biden the state of Georgia. If we can't turn out the young black vote, then he doesn't stand a chance.
Still some, like Renika Strother, back the president's stance.
I'm supporting of President Biden and what he's done on everything since he's been in office. And now he's making a choice to stand on one side. I'm going to pray that we're all doing what is the right thing to do and that it's going to all work out.
Reverend McDonald still hopes President Biden changes course before it's too late.
Do you think President Biden and his administration really understands how much his stance on the Middle East might hurt him among African Americans?
I don't think he understands it now, but he's beginning to.
Yemi Shalcendor, NBC News, Atlanta, Georgia.
Thanks for watching. Stay up.
Richard.
Yeah.
Now you hear what you hear what the pastor said about why they're approaching him in reference to this.
Right,
but then
right.
You heard the two, and they were young people. They looked like they were under 35. Express their feelings on what was going on, and the one brother said that, you know, he knows plenty of his peers. Said that you know, they don't plan to vote, and she asked him what he said. They plan to stay home, and she said, "And do what?" He said, "Not vote." You heard what she said.
Yeah, like, well, like, are you really? Yeah.
But he said that, because he pointed out Georgia, he said that he needs the black vote or he don't have a chance.
Mm.
Now, the young lady that was asked said that she supports everything that he has done since he has been president.
Right.
And being that this is his stance, she just prays that it's the right thing to do. Now, Richard, I don't want to bash what anybody is saying, but all I got to say to the sister is educate herself on what is going on, his stance, who he's backing, why, and what's going on in that area. And then maybe she won't come off sounding like that. I'll just say that, because I don't want to trash necessarily the girl's opinion, because I don't know whether she really knows what's going on. Now, if she did or got access to knowing what's going on and sounded like that, that's different. Like black elected officials, they have access to know exactly what's going on. So when they come off silly, like when Clyburn, when they asked him about the failing numbers of black support for the Democratic Party and Biden, when he came off talking about, well, I don't know about that. I talked to my daughter and granddaughter, you know. I chose to fire off in reference to that because that's stupid and it don't make sense for somebody that got access to not only find out the information, but to generate the information that's needed, Richard. He got access to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because his other elected officers and officials under him, he can poll his people and find out accurate numbers, at least for his state. So to come off stupid like that is different. This young lady, I don't know whether she has the right information. All I can say is that she got access to better information where she can come off better than sounding like that. That she's in support of everything he does, and she's just going to pray that it's the right thing to do.
Now, that part there, like you said, it's a matter of what is it that you perceive is the right thing to do? When, you know, that's where it should be more than, you know, leaving it up to prayer to decide whether you decide individually, you decide it's, you know, wrongly or rightly, but to say that's just like not voting in my mind, like you're just a spectator, you know? So how can you agree with somebody when you don't even have a position of your own? How can you disagree? And, you know, I'm just looking at this, and maybe you had presented this or shared this before, of this Gallup poll out from February 7th. Democrats lose ground with black and Hispanic adults. But the thing that struck what the young guy was saying, or what the young person was saying, where he says the Republican and Democratic parties have distinct strengths within different subgroups of U.S. population. However, Democrats have lost ground among some of their traditionally stronger support groups while gaining ground on others. This is the base. And the thing that got me was that the Democratic Party's wide lead over Republicans and Black American Party preference has shrunk by 20% over the past 3 years. Democrats lead among Hispanic adults and adults age 18 to 29 have slid nearly as much, resulting in Democrats holding only a modest edge among both groups. So what the young guy saying, as far as these young people not participating, 20 points. And it didn't say that they're moving to the Republican Party. It's just saying that it has decreased in the last 3 years. Isn't that within? And this is coming out in February. You know, this poll, this Gallup poll. So that's the under the Biden's presidency that these young people are saying, I'm not participating. And I like to say, you know, that means that's a for us who are thinking like there is a third way. That means that we should be motivated to be able to do, as you say, provide that information, provide that education, and in relationship to at least looking at what else we can do that is in our own interest, not just do nothing.
Exactly. Okay. Wow. Okay. Richard, a couple things that he mentioned during that speech that I want to play. Mm. The first one, if you remember when, I think it was about a month and a half ago, and when I played the clip when Langley was getting grilled at this congressional hearing,
right,
about the coups that's happening in Africa, and right, and I'm going to use layman's terms, they were basically saying, you know, we done paid all this money to cultivate these people. What's going on? Was that the kind of rough assessment that you basically got from?
Right.
And if you remember, Richard, he kept mentioning about his answer was about the core values. You remember that?
Right.
In fact, I'll replay it because it was something that Biden said yesterday that ties into that. But let me see if I can find that clip. And I might not play it all, but I want to, and man, I don't know, maybe I will play it all because I think it the incidents that's happening on the continent is more crystallized now because you see more initiatives based on what they were doing, like Burkina Faso and Mali and other places. In fact, since then, Ghana has passed those laws against LGBTQ that I think threw a monkey wrench in American foreign policy. Because if you remember during the summer, Kamala Harris is over there basically telling them that, you know, we want you to do this. And Odell was kind of on the fence, But their parliament was saying, you know, you don't, you're talking to Odo, but we make the decisions. You remember what was stated, Richard?
Yeah.
Well, since then, you see what it has happened. And, and according to published reports, their laws are even more stringent than Kenya's and Uganda's.
Mm.
But let me play what Geis and Langley said, because it's something that he said, or that Langley was saying to them, that Biden said last night. But I just want to see if I can play this.
General Langley, I have constituents that have been scattered across Africa on train and equip missions. So just ballpark, in the last decade, how many Africans has the United States military trained and equipped?
Congressman, I don't have that figure. I can get that figure for you.
Ballpark, just, you know, how many?
No, Congressman, it would be a wild, it would be a wild guess, right?
Seems like something we should know, right?
Over the years, we have trained a substantial number, especially in the Gulf of Guinea states, but then including
like more than 10,000.
It is more than 10,000.
More than 50,000.
I'd say we're reaching around 50,000 at least.
And what percentage of the people we've trained end up participating in insurrections or coups against their own government?
Very small number, Congressman. Very small number.
So what percentage do you think?
I'd say probably less than 1%.
But it does happen.
The IMET program is in force and we've pushed a number, a significant number through our schools across the
military. And what data sets do you track to arrive at the conclusion that less than 1% of the roughly 50,000 that we've trained have participated in coups?
Because
it'd be like about 500, about 1% of 50,000.
Congressman, you may have that information. I don't at this time, but I know.
Well, I know there are some, right? Like in, go ahead and throw up that image. This is Colonel Mamadé Dumbuya, and this is a photo of him. Did we train and equip him in Guinea?
By name, I cannot identify that.
Well, that guy in the middle with the big red hat, Colonel Mamadé Dumbuya, that's him with a bunch of U.S. service members outside of our embassy. And just months after this photo was taken in 2021, he led a coup in Guinea and threw out the leader. Does that concern you?
Congressman, core values is what we start off with in IMA programs.
Do we share core values with Colonel Dumbuya?
Core values. I will repeat that. Core values. Respect for humanity.
Do we share those values with Colonel
Dumbuya? Absolutely. In our curriculum.
He led a coup.
We do.
Okay, well, that's a very telling answer. In Burkina Faso, did we share core values with the leader that we trained there who led a coup?
It's in our curriculum. We stress core values.
Curriculum?
Request civilian-led governance.
Hold on. Is leading coups in our curriculum?
Absolutely not.
So
civilian-led.
My question is, do we share core values with the coup leader in Burkina Faso, who we trained?
Holistically, we teach core values with a respect for civilian governance, apolitical, and that's what sticks across a very high percentage in the 99 percentile.
Right? But not everybody. I wonder how many people it takes to plan a coup. I mean, initially you didn't know how many we trained and equipped. Then you said it was 1%. You had no basis for that 1% number because there's no data set you track. Mr. Chairman, I seek unanimous consent to enter into the record. Another U.S. trained soldier stages a coup in West Africa by The Intercept.
Without objection, so ordered.
And I further seek unanimous consent to enter into the record. U.S. forces trained the Guinean colonel behind the recent coup in West African country, and this is regard to Guinea.
Without objection, so ordered.
So I guess the question is, why should U.S. taxpayers be paying?
I'm going to stop it there, Richard. Mm. But you keep hearing him mention about the core values that he was mentioning. That's train them core values. You remember that?
Right.
And then this guy that was grilling him at the congressional hearing kept mentioning about, well, the core values is not sticking. Now, he didn't
what
really...
are core values?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
What are these core values?
Yeah, well, listen, Biden mentioned it yesterday at that State of the Union. Now, I'm going to play what he said, and he got rousing applause from the black leader. And I'm only focusing in on the black leadership there. I don't care what whites are doing. They could have stood on their head if they wanted to. Some of them did to a degree. And if you watched, you've seen the dysfunction, their family dysfunction, because you've seen both of them going back and forth at one another. And I think a couple people got thrown out, if I'm not mistaken. But let me play what he said in reference to that, the core values. This is Biden.
I know the American story. Again and again, I've seen the contest between competing forces and the battle for the soul of our nation. Between those who want to pull America back to the past and those who want to move America into the future. My lifetime has taught me to embrace freedom and democracy. A future based on core values that have defined America. Honesty, decency, dignity, equality. To respect everyone. To give everyone a fair shot. To give hate no safe harbor.
Now, wait a minute, Richard. Did you hear what he said? The definition of those core values?
Honesty, decency.
Let me go slow. I want that to kind of sink in there. Because these are the core values that has founded America.
I know the American story. Again and again, I've seen the contest between competing forces and the battle for the soul of our nation. Between those who want to pull America back to the past and those who want to move America into the future. My lifetime has taught me to embrace freedom and democracy. A future based on core values that have defined America. Honesty, decency, dignity, equality. To respect everyone. To give everyone a fair shot. To give hate no safe harbor.
Now, wait a minute.
Yeah, everyone. Safe harbor.
And see, that's what I'm talking about. These people love the show. They love to put on a show. Is that the America that black folks know? Honesty. He said, well, not only black folks, the Native Americans that was here when he got here.
Mm.
Honesty, decency, equality, dignity, respect for people. I mean, what? I mean, are you kidding me? And black and the blacks in the audience jumping up on their feet, clapping. Mm-hmm. I mean, who are you talking to?
I guess they experiencing it and everybody else is missing it. Yeah. Especially when you talk about the policy, which you had mentioned in the beginning, you know, when we talk about these, the condition that is creating these young people, assuming this generation that is actually engaged in the, you know, the destruction, the public destruction by these guns, which we have to raise again the question, so many guns are in our community? Where is this money coming from? Where is this guns coming from? You know, is this a part of the core value and decency? Because not the actors of it, but the condition that create them. They ain't old. I think it was just what state just passed the law where Delaware, no, Maryland. They just passed a law where 10 years old, you are going to be considered, you know, any act, a certain act, as a basically a felon at 10 years old. You know, so is this a part of the core values, the condition that will create to where the laws will have to be in place by a state to where you're going to lock up and put in prison a 10-year-old for an act? And who is it primarily going to affect? Or regardless, anybody else is going to affect, should we be concerned of how that will affect black youth?
Yeah, well, I mean, this country is created in violence. That should be the mantra instead of the American eagle. It should be a picture of a gun, because that's how it was created. I don't know these core values that he's talking about that founded this land. And he said it in that speech yesterday. Honesty, decency, equality, dignity, and respect for other people. But it got rousing applause from whites and blacks.
Well, you know, at whatever this top is, they may have those values amongst themselves, but that don't mean it. Like they said, even with the income or the wealth, it may not trickle down.
Okay. Well, okay. All right, Richard. I know you're just saying that tongue in cheek.
Hey, I mean, you know, it's coming from somewhere.
Yeah, or you're right.
It is just theatrics. It is just saying something to try to, you know, and then the question becomes, well, what effect does that have on those young Democratic voters or would-be Democratic voters? Are they going to be questioning those core values as they see that how those values are being played out when not only the American foreign policy is willing to provide a state funds to where you can watch those core values kill people, young innocent children and women in hospitals. You can watch that on TV. And is that the core values playing out? Yeah. And then on this side, are we providing the resources and the support? And belatedly saying, are we quietly almost in a whisper, well, we recommend a ceasefire.
And then, you know, the games being played. Oh, after Israel said, we're not stopping. So United States sends a couple of C-4, those, you know, the big carriers to do an airdrop. And then when they did the airdrop, the people come out there to get food and they was fired upon. Several of them was killed.
Is that core value? Is that the way we, is that, and is that the core values when the general is saying that they're educating military personnel in African countries? That they're educating them to these kind of core values.
Exactly. Man, I'm telling you. See, some of our people, these people are dangerous. We already know what to expect out of our traditional enemies. But some of these blacks that they have in these positions are dangerous. But if you don't know, then, you know, when you see them, you're waving pom-poms and you're proud and you're telling your children, oh, look at him. He did this, that. Some of these people are dangerous.
And once again, those people who are, because the commentator, when she asked the young guy, well, what are they going to do? You know, like, she's shocked. Well, what they're going to do is not participate because they obviously resonating that this contradiction is too much for them to participate and they're not in agreement with those core values.
Richard, another thing that he stated there that was that I want to play this clip on. When he was talking about his journey being a politician, how he came up and he got involved in politics early on, and he never mentioned any of his mentors like James Eastland, that racist bigot that was a Southern, I think he was senator, and others that was his friends. He never mentioned those. In fact, if you remember, Richard, when he was running for president, Kamala Harris and I think Booker both mentioned Eastland and a few others, and they called Biden a racist. You remember when they was running, when he was running for president?
Mm-hmm.
But now that language is suddenly forgotten because he's the Democrat. He won the presidency, so and he gave her that position as the vice president. So all of those things, maybe they were lies. I don't know. I don't think they were lies. Not. I don't think they weren't lies. Mm. But maybe they were just using that to get to a certain position. Evidently. Because now, all of a sudden, you don't hear that mentioned. You heard it mentioned when she was running for president and when Booker was running for president.
Mm.
That Biden was a racist and friends with other races.
Mm.
Richard, he said this other one here that I want to kind of, it was short, but it was insulting to, it should have been insulting to some of the blacks there listening. Here it is, a little short clip he played here. Let me see it.
We are as Americans. And we're the only nation in the world with a heart and soul that draws from old and new. Home to Native Americans and ancestors have been here for thousands of years. Home to people of every place, from every place on earth. They came freely. Some came in chains. Some came when famine struck, like my ancestral family in Ireland. Some to flee persecution, to chase dreams that are impossible anywhere but here in America. That's America. And we all come from somewhere. But we're all Americans.
Richard, did you hear what he just said?
I'm reacting to, okay, the some who came in chains. Yeah, we're all Americans.
Yeah, we all came to chase dreams. But the first two that he mentioned, wait, let me play this again, man. This guy's, wow.
We are as Americans. And we're the only nation in the world with a heart and soul that draws from old and new. Home to Native Americans and ancestors have been here for thousands of years.
Now, well, wait a minute. When you say that, you give the people the impression that it's still home to them.
Mm.
And they're, you know, they're living here equally as Americans. That's not true at all.
Mm.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
No. I mean, most of those on the reservation.
Most of those nations, they don't even exist anymore. They almost wiped it. They committed a crime against humanity against those people. They almost wiped them out. Maybe they feel as though, maybe if you speak to them, I think that they would have something different to say besides what he just said about them. He gives the people the impression that we're all here together and we're all Americans. And then after he spoke about them, this is what he said about you.
Home to people of every place, from every place on earth. They came freely. Some came in chains. Some came when famine struck, like my ancestral family in Ireland. Some to flee persecution, to chase dreams that are impossible anywhere but here in America.
Okay. He said his family came here because of famine in Ireland. Right. They came here.
Right.
Black people were forced here. That's different.
Were we chasing a dream?
That's what I'm saying. We all came to he said we all came to chase a dream. And he mentioned all of these nations or peoples that are here. That we came to chase a dream. We just happened to come here to chase a dream in chains. I mean, what kind of, and Maxine Harris, Maxine Waters, and all them people, Clyburn, that stupid ass, and Booker, and all of the, Jeffries, they all standing up clapping their, they almost clapped the skin off their hands. Are you kidding me? Our people came here, they came here in chains. Not they were forced here. Not they jumped off a boat and face hungry sharks in the ocean because they didn't want to come here. That we came here to chase a dream. And then I listened to the Black Talk station here in this city and this morning, and the stupid ass host is, oh, it was such a great speech. Come on, man. See, this is what hurting our people, some of this black media. This is what hurts, because they don't get the proper information. We came here chasing a dream. Richard, let me say this in reference to that. Came here chasing the dream. And you can go on the American Census site. They got other sites where a lot of this information is. But let me just read this. Because black people only came here as, quote unquote, immigrants. You'll find evidence of that after the Civil War. In fact, it was almost by 1900. They weren't coming here other than that. They, right. They were coming here in chains other than that. But let me read what it stated here. It says approximately 180,000 Africans and blacks passed through Ellis Island between 1892 and 1954. You hear that, Richard?
Yep.
180,000. The year Ellis Island was shut as a point of entry for all immigrants arriving in New York. So evidently it was shut down then. But they have on record that 180,000 came through that corridor. Now, let me read this. And keep in mind that figure. Because you might say, well, there's a lot of people. Although that is not a lot of people.
No.
Now, let me read this. Between 1492 and 1820, approximately 2.6 million Europeans immigrated to the Americas. 50% British, 40% were Spanish, Portuguese, Swiss, German, whatever, they got it broken down. Between 1492 and 1820, 2.6 million Europeans came here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that pales in comparison to 180,000 from 1892 to 1954 that were black, right?
Right.
Now, let's look at the figure from 1820 to 1930. And I'm not even going up to 1954. They took blacks up to from 1892 to 1954 till they closed down the Ellis Island entrance point. You remember?
Right, right.
But let me read this. But it was the 19th century, in the first half of the 20th century, that European immigration to the Americas reached a historic peak. Never before in human history have so many people immigrated to another continent. Between 1820 and 1930, 60 million Europeans immigrated. 60 mm-hmm. million, Richard. 60 million. Now, out of those 60 million, they came here chasing a dream. Because it was land stolen. It was another continent that was stolen from another people. So he's right. That old dumbass is right. They did come here chasing a dream. And when they came here, that Homestead Act gave them 160 acres of land. Mm. 60 million of them, according to their own statistics, I'm not making this up, came here during that period. 60 million. Never before in human, according to this, what I'm reading, never before in human history have so many people immigrated to another continent. And they were able to do that because they used a gun to clear out the land.
Mm. And that's why they was talking bad about them. People, I mean, you talk about the eugenics and you know, those Eastern Europe, I mean, these, by the turn of the 20th century, they were saying how ignorant they were and, you know, and these, they were doing that, as you say, while they were letting them in. And then giving them the land, which is giving them wealth, opportunity.
Exactly. They came here chasing a dream. That's why his parents, his grandpa, whoever, came here from Ireland, they did come here chasing the dream. But to put black folks in that mixture that he said, that dumbass said in that speech about we came here chasing some dream, chasing opportunity, but we came in chains.
Mm-hmm.
And according to their records, between 1892 and 1954, only 180,000 black folks came to this country, quote unquote, chasing a dream.
Mm.
But over 60 million of his brothers and sisters definitely came here chasing a dream. They all did. All of them.
Really?
Richard, you know, I got... sometimes you got to give credit. A broken clock is right twice a day. Now, And I got to find an article because I think it was in the New York Post, if I'm not mistaken. In fact, let's take a break because I want to find it. And it kind of sets up what I want to say afterwards. But we're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we're in open forum. It's Freestyle Friday. Anything you want to say or get off your chest, you can give us a call, 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI, the only word you need to know to join your global KometsU Black family, to join your interconnected KometsU Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
You know that some of us are not afraid, that even though we may be elected, we'll say what's on our mind. But we must understand that we're freedom fighters first, and that all the other things come next. That I'm a black man first, and then a state representative. I don't confuse the two. And I think it's time for us to wake up and realize and understand that you got a lot of us that are willing to go to battle because of freedom. Gonna never be free unless we take it. There's too many of us sitting around thinking that it's gonna come to us on some damn silver platter. Wake up, you fools, and understand this man has no respect for you. None. None whatsoever.
And know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community, to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
Because of the kinds of victories that were won by the Southern Freedom Movement, black people occupy far more establishment positions than they did back in my day in the 1960s. So in a sense, you also have a struggle with a kind of black establishment that has a vested interest in the status quo. So you're up against an establishment within the black community that we never had to face because it didn't exist because of segregation and discrimination. And that makes their task, if they want to organize, much, much more difficult with respect to the black community than what we had to face.
Today, our people can see that we're faced with a government conspiracy. This government has failed us. The senators who are filibustering concerning your and my rights, that's the government. Don't say it, Southern senators. This is the government. This is a government filibuster. It's not a segregationist filibuster. It's a government filibuster. Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government.
So this government has failed us. And government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program. A do-it-yourself philosophy. A do-it-right-now philosophy. It's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it, you can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:08 here on this Freestyle Friday. And you can join the conversation if you choose to, with a question, comment, or just get something off your chest by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard, I think it was 2 weeks ago, the State of Black America report was released by Mark Morial and the Urban League. Reached out to him last year when they issued that report. And at the time, they had some other engagements, and he said that they would come on, that they would get back to me, but I never followed up with them. But I'm going to get on that this year because I want them to, you know, you remember last year, I think the theme was, the theme seemed to be consistent every year, that black people are in trouble.
Right.
I think it's the same thing again this year. I think last year kind of diverted towards about democracy. Talking about black people, their democracy is under attack. This time is, you know, almost on the same theme about black people being in trouble. And it quotes all the different stratas you know, education, housing, jobs, things of that nature. But I got to give credit where it's due, Richard, because a broken clock is right twice a day. And Sharpton said something the other day. In fact, he had a press conference in New York. And now, listen, demand is too much of a mouthpiece for not only the Democratic Party, but Jews, religious organizations, Republican. I remember when he was on that tour with Gingrich and friends with what's the guy's name that was he made that slur about them being in Sylvia's restaurant, Pat Buchanan. So he seems to be a guy for hire. He don't care whether they're Democrat, Republicans, religious organizations, or whoever. He was running around with Greenblatt a little while ago. So, you know, he kind of goes with the wind. But like I said, a broken clock is right twice a day. He gave a press conference the day of that State of the Union yesterday. And he said something that the figure had been out maybe a couple of months. I think we read it when it first came out on Time for an Awakening. That in New York City, the unemployment, which is the largest city in this country, the unemployment rate was, I think, one point. I don't have it in front of me, but I remember it was 1.something% for whites, but 12% for black people. If you remember that, Richard?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he said, now this was yesterday. And like I said, I got to give credit where credit is due in this respect. He had this held a press conference on the very day, according to this, on the very day of that State of the Union, and said it was a moral issue up there in New York about black people without jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And what he says here, because now, he wasn't dealing with Manhattan. He was dealing with the outer boroughs. See, that other report I read dealt with New York City as a whole. This one, he was dealing with all the outer boroughs beside Manhattan. He first said the unemployment for blacks up there is a moral issue, and that the Biden administration should be doing some more about that than they are. He said that white unemployment is 3% and black unemployment is 9.3%, basically triple. For black unemployment to be almost triple white unemployment in Queens, in the Bronx, in Brooklyn is inexcusable. Reverend Young explained how bad it is in East Elmhurst. I'm not familiar with a lot of the neighborhoods in New York. In this community, according to the Reverend Young, 20% of our people are living in poverty. We serve in this church every Saturday 800 families. And the line is wrapped around the church for four blocks. Every Saturday, we provide fresh produce, meat, and non-perishable items to the community. Now, he talks about the unemployment, the poverty rate, 20% in the black community. And the unemployment rate is triple that of whites. That's in New York. It's no different in a lot of these other cities. But according to that president last night, he was saying how great the economy was. Right. And black folks was clapping. Black leadership was clapping. Either they out of touch to their own constituents, who they give them a guilt trip when they don't get out here and vote, or they just doing this because they benefit from it. It's one or the other, Richard. And they can't be out of touch because they see what's going on in these communities. But they're benefiting from it. So they're just going to play the party line. There's no other way you can get around it. But I give him credit because he did say something in reference to it. It was a long time coming, but at least he expressed it. So I give him that much, even though he goes with the wind and takes money from whoever. He takes money from Democrats, he takes money from Republicans, and he takes money from religious organizations. That's how I'll term it.
But the point that you make, Elliot, as far as I'm you know, I guess I am fascinated with this economic thing, you know, as it relates to Black folks particularly, you know, and you said they, because I noticed this 20%, you know, is of living in poverty kind of is across the board. You can see whether you talk about counties or cities or town, the amount of Black folks that is living in poverty is 20%. Then I picked out this here number, the majority of the Black households, 55%, were in the lower wealth tier. We're not talking about income. We're talking about wealth, right? In 2021, that is, they had less than $41,700 in wealth. So that means 55%, if they own a home or, you know, care, that's the 41,000. And that number, you know, has to be, I mean, 55% is a large number, and 41,000 is no money. Yeah. I mean, you can wipe that out with a health problem.
Oh, certainly. In fact, when you get done, Richard, I want to read off some of these figures from the Census Bureau in reference to that.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, because I mean, I'm just raising, because the thing that strikes me is when we're talking about the State of the Union and the question about the economic standing and how this is. Was this in February 8th? Jerome Powell, the, you know, person that heads the Federal Reserve, the headline in the Fortune magazine, after Jerome Powell warns of an unsustainable $34 trillion national debt growing faster than the economy. CBO projects record 116% of GDP by 2034. What's this? 2024? In 10 years, that there will be more paid out on the debt than the country produce. How does that affect Black folks? And then you hear that, you know, these State of the Union, you know, and they talk about jobs, and Biden talking about, you know, he comes to Philadelphia and says, you know, about the Shiplar and this wind vessel is going to produce 1,000 workers across 9 unions to build the vessel. How does that affect Black Philadelphia? 1,000 in the union?
Yeah, well, if you go by history and what they've done in the past, all these jobs that they say they're going to create, they're not going to you. And a lot of these Blacks that are in high offices in these cities don't get guarantees that certain number of these jobs go to you, or business opportunities, not just jobs, business opportunities, prime contractor opportunities, things of that nature. They don't get no guarantees. They'll get smoke and mirrors and then go tell the community a bunch of crap. But then when you look after these things are built, and then you look and say, damn, there's no Black businesses here. The only Blacks you see in there might be some Blacks doing service stuff, sweeping up, mopping the floor, stuff like that.
And
Richard, let me read this, because that reverend at that press conference that was there with Sharpton said that in those neighborhoods, 20% live in poverty. You remember he said that?
Right.
Now let's go to some of these census figures, and a lot of them are current. They bring out data sometimes a year or sometimes 2 years after the particular year that they're dealing with. So the figures I'm reading off is, we just went into 2024, so they're 3 years old. But the numbers haven't changed hardly at all. And if they've changed, they went up. Let me read this. It says, in 2021, nearly 27% of all African Americans below the age of 18 were living in poverty. For whites, it was 8.8%. This is nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
18.1% of all black families were living in poverty. Now, that first one, 27%, it says of all African Americans. Mm-hmm. So you could be a single man, single woman, or whatever, under that category. But 18.8% of all black families were living in poverty. For white families, it's only 5% were living below the poverty threshold. The government defines poverty rate as four persons, two adults or two children, and having an income of annual income of less than $28,000. $28,000, Richard. So that means that 27% nationwide of black people live in poverty.
One quarter.
One quarter. Now this guy and black leadership is clapping their skin off their hands about jobs created for the middle class. Your people are living, a large percentage of them are living in poverty. Let me read a couple more of these here. The black-white family poverty rate gap, where African-American families are about three times as likely to be poor than white families, have remained virtually unchanged for the past half century. Wait a minute. You hear that, Richard?
Yeah.
Virtually unchanged for the past 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
Black individuals made up 20% of the population in poverty in 2022. So wait a minute. Hold it. The first stat I read off was 2021. This is 2022. It went up a couple of percentage points. Black individuals made up 20.1% of the population in poverty in 2022, but only 13.5% of the total population. This results in a ratio of 1.5, meaning that black population is overrepresented in poverty. Wait a minute, Richard, hold it. That ain't what that old fart said yesterday. He keeps talking about the middle class. And the black leadership is clapping. The stats say something different. If you look around these cities, it says something different. And then you see the children running around with guns in their hands, taking people, taking their cars, taking money, because they ain't got nothing at home. But they managed to have plenty of these guns in these neighborhoods. Where are they coming from? Just like you asked the question, where are they coming from? That's never addressed. Let me finish this, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are now. They use different language. I think because we talk about this on several occasions. You have people living in poverty, and then you have the working poor. That's how I termed it. You remember that, Richard? You remember that, Richard, when I mentioned about the poverty?
Yep.
About the people like a working poor. Now, it says here, which is kind of weird because I didn't really look it up. It says there are two bases of poverty in America.
Right.
Absolute and relative. Mm-hmm. Absolute poverty is based on the inability to have basic needs and live appropriately. However, relative poverty is when the cost of living is beyond what a family can afford compared to other people around them. I don't really understand the difference there, Richard. I'm not an economist. But they got two terms here for poverty. But believe me, whatever these two terms are, black folks is at the head of both of these categories.
Right.
It says among black people who have jobs, too many of the jobs are low quality jobs, meaning that they have low pay, few benefits, and no avenue for workers to have a voice on improving their working conditions. Now, all of these come from the Census Bureau.
Right.
Statistics from the Census Bureau.
The national recorder of the state of the population.
Let me, before I go, because I see a couple calls popped up. Before I go to that, let me read. Now, this is housing. Now, this is jobs, Richard. If a large percentage is living in poverty, and I think one of the stats you quoted, that 51% of black people in this country make less than $50,000. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
So that's over half of the black population.
Right.
That's not really making a lot of money.
Right.
I think it's 22%. If I'm not mistaken, and I don't have it in front of me, maybe I'd try to pull it up while we're on the program. 22% makes between $50,000 and $75,000.
I have 27.3.
That make between $50,000 and $75,000.
Between $25,000 and $50,000, 15.2 make between $50,000 and $75,000.
Look how the number's starting to decrease. And I ain't even talking about the ones that make over 100, because I think that was in the single figures.
7.6% earn between $75,000 and $100,000.
7.6.
Right.
So anybody that makes over 100 is really low.
9.4. There's a number, there's percentage. You know, and I think I got this out of Brookings.
So the majority of black people are making less than $50,000.
Right, right.
Okay, all right.
And when you look at that, so that don't come to 100.
Okay. So
that means below 25,000. You know, that's where the number that's making below 25,000 is another number. They don't even, you know, the numbers I pulled didn't even really deal with that. Like, from that amount, they started from 25,000 to 50,000 and said it's 27%. So you add up 27, 15, 7, and 9, that don't come to 100. Which means that below 25 is what that come to.
Wow. Yeah, well, I mean, the figures bear out something different than what that guy was talking about yesterday. And it also bears out that there's a whole millions of people that's not being addressed in what he's talking about. But that's supposed to be being addressed by their leadership. But they were busy clapping for these figures that basically pertain to white America. And some of the whites were saying that it don't pertain to them, and they're arguing about it, family squabble. But it definitely don't pertain to black America. Now, let me read this, Richard, because when you talk about economy and jobs and your wage earnings, that plays into if you can afford. We live in a capitalist system. That means if you can afford to buy a home, afford to buy a car. Let me read this thing here from one of them is from the Lending Tree, the other is from Newsweek. It says, in each of the nation's 50 largest metro areas, black people own a disproportionate small share of homes relative to the population size. Black people across the nation's 50 largest metro areas own an average of 10.15% of owner-occupied homes across the same area. For comparison, white people across the nation's 50 largest metro areas account for an average of 69.1% of owner-occupied homes. Richard, do you see that?
Yeah.
10.15% compared to 69.1%. Yeah, this is from Newsweek on February 20th of this year, 2024. More black Americans dip into their retirement savings for down payments on houses than any other demographic. They face a tougher challenge securing mortgages while getting home loans that are more expensive than their other counterparts. This was shown by research by the National Association of Realtors released on Tuesday, February 20th. About 17% of black homebuyers use their 401ks and pensions to generate a down payment for a home, a percentage point higher from the year before and higher than any other racial group. Nearly 45% of black households own their own home compared to 75% of white households. U.S. Census data that shows that the percentage of blacks who own their own homes today is essentially the same as when housing discrimination was outlawed in 1968. The 1970 census found that 42% of black households own their own homes. So wait a minute, Richard, hold it. This came out in Newsweek in February of 2024. That 45% of blacks own their own households, or own their own homes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It says today it is essentially the same as when housing discrimination was outlawed in 1968. In 1970, 42% of blacks own their own home. These statistics are virtually unchanged. But these people get up here in these State of the Union to talk about the economy. They're not talking about you. But I want to drive it home that these black elected officials are supposed to be representing you, and they're not. They're representing Jews. They're representing special interests. They're representing just white Anglos in general. They're not representing you. But they use you to get into office. I had something on education, too, but I'll kind of hold that. Let's go to people. A couple calls been waiting. Let's go first to Phoenix. Yes, sir.
Yes, Elliot, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, greetings.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, good brothers. I'm doing great. You know, when I hear you talk about these leaders, so-called leaders, you know, these people are not leaders. They're just figureheads, really. And we really need to start put their feet to the fire, because if they are not, if any of these politicians, black politicians, are not advocating for wherever black folks make up the mass majority of the population, black people must control the economy and body politics of that community.
Yes.
That is intelligence. That is... We should present that to every black politician. Here, this is the agenda. We need economic control of our community. You see? And those figures that you quoted there, as you said, they haven't really changed. I live in Memphis here. Memphis. And they just elected a young African American mayor. And you know, I hope that he, you know, brings some changes. But if they're not addressing the economy, they ain't saying nothing. All they're talking about is crime. Oh, we have to address crime. And now, what they're talking about now is they want to lock up the parents. As you were saying earlier, they want to lock the parents up now of these kids that's out here running amok. See, so they create the deplorable economic conditions in our community, and then they come in, oh, well, we have to lock you up because these kids wrote it amok, I lock up the parents. You know, it's just, it don't stop. These people just don't stop. We're going to have to make them stop. We're going to, you know, and I tell you, it ain't going to get no better for black folks, you know, with the way this thing is going now. You see, in New York, what happening now, they have to deploy military in the subway.
Yeah, so you see, the society, I saw
that. Yes, the fabric of the country is unraveling. It's unraveling. It's like Humpty Dumpty. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. Ain't no way you can stitch this back together again. You know? You can't stitch it back. So we got to create an arc where we can save ourselves. You know what I'm saying? Insulate ourselves from what's coming. Can we see if the country continue and the trajectory is going, you ain't going to have no country in a few years. This thing going to start, these states going to start separating. You see, Texas talking about separating already. See? And they're sending troops down there. Even Tennessee sending troops down there to the border. So the thing is, it's unraveling. You know, we got to just prepare. But I thank you, gentlemen, for this program. I'll mute my phone and continue listening.
Brother Marcus, let me say something in reference to what you said when you was talking about locking the parents up. Mm-hmm. Now, in some segments of the black community, there's no man there in the house. And you could see the environment that this system has set up for black people, that a lot of black people are poor or they're not working. The numbers bear that out. Or they're barely making enough. Some of these households, there's no man there. It's a woman. And the women, in order to keep their families head above water, are working two jobs, maybe three. So sometimes they're not home. These children get home from school or whatever. It's nobody there. So sometimes they're on their own. They're on their own to get something to eat. And then they might be back out on the street if they do their homework. So our people are really in a vice in this system. We really are. Because you're going to blame some of these women that's doing the best job they can, and there might not be no man there, and they're working two jobs to keep the family's head above water. It ain't like they're sitting at home not doing nothing and just letting these children run them up. They're doing all this stuff, and they're coming home, and, you know, things, you know, this system is killing our folks, literally and figuratively.
Yes, 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 it is. And they create the conditions that we find ourselves in and then blame us for being in that condition. So you are correct. You know, that's what, and then they have some of these knucklehead people down here, black folks, saying, yes, they need to go to jail. We need to bring the National Guard in here, you know. Like, what the? And I said, these people are out of their minds. You know what I'm saying? They are totally out of touch with what's going on. You know what I'm saying? Are you going to bring the military into, you know what I'm saying? I mean, how is that going to help the situation here, like here in Memphis? Maybe in Chicago, they probably, you know, deterred, but not here in Memphis, you know? And where they going to post the military? In the people bedroom? Because most of the people that's doing stuff to each other is people that know each other. It ain't strangers. Most of the heinous crime you see going on, the murders and the homicide, is people that know each other, friends, family, husband and wife, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend, you know. So they are just, these people don't stop, Brother Elliot. These people are persistent. And they keep their foot on black folks' neck. And then black folks, some of our people help support the foolishness, though. They support them, man.
That's what they did with the crime bill that Biden is supposed to have been a part of the creation. It was supposedly black. At least what they projected is that black people were in their community were crying for something to be done after the drugs were brought into the community, and then the whole culture of violence that erupted out of that, the economy of that erupted, then black folks, or at least again the propagandizing, it was elderly black people who were saying they could not be able to move in their community, and now it's because of the gun violence, and then they changed the language, right? because it was then the stop and frisk became the policy. Now they changed the language. Now it's, what is that?
Public safety.
Public safety. And for some godforsaken reason, all of a sudden you get shooting on the subways. And in Philadelphia, they created a whole legal military control around the public service, the public transportation system. And you see in New York, they're talking about they got the National Guard to come in. So it's, again, as you say, Brother Marcus, it's Black people now advocating again for this type of draconian or martial law placed on the Black community.
Exactly, because we are not being scientific. We are not being scientific. You see, we are not. Sometimes I get on the radio down here in Memphis and talk, right? They're calling, they have a little show, they're calling. And if you hear some of those people attack me, some of these antebellum people attack me for speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, it's just... You know, as what Carlos Cook said, we got to take the revolution up a notch. We have to take it up a notch. You see, we're going to have to have some pain attached to this thing so people can understand what the hell is going on. This let's hold hands and, that ain't working with a lot of our people. It's going to be... have to be some pain attached to I say, look, if you violate, there is pain attached to it. That, we're going to have to do something different. What we're doing ain't working. It's not working. So we're going to have to change the program. Anyway, I'm here and I'm listening and thank you.
Thanks for your contribution.
No problem. Good brothers.
Let's go to Philadelphia.
Good evening, Brother Elliot. Good evening, Brother Richard. How y'all doing tonight?
Yes, sir. Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard. I praise be to Allah. You know, it's good to hear y'all brothers tonight and good to follow my good brother, Brother Marcus. You know, Brother Marcus said about unraveling, Elliot, and you've been beating that drum too, Brother, about how this nation is unraveling before our eyes. It makes me remember the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's speech that he made a few years ago called The Unraveling of a Great Nation, talk about America and how it's fallen right before our eyes and stuff, you know. And, and you just look at, like you said, like Brother Marcus said just now, you know, it's to show you how the state of condition that we are in. We got Black people advocating for military people to come in there and just murder their, gun down these people. You know yourself, these National Guardsmen, they just like any other white paramilitary law enforcement, whether police, state police, transit police, they're not going to discern. They're not going to have no discernment between the so-called thugs and the young. They're going to, when they start beating heads and shooting, they're going to be shooting and beating heads of everybody. And this, I think that's what some of our people fail to realize. But I never forget Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Several years ago, my Lenore guy, rest her soul, when she was talking to, it was during the 70s, during the notorious Frank Rizzo era. And you had some of her neighbors down in North Philly saying, yeah, I can't wait to Rizzo get back in there so he could. And this show that's this level of self-hatred, how the level of self-hatred has our people even denigrating their own people. My would tell me, she said, they would say things like, well, Rizzo get back in there, he going to have these cops, they're going to beat these niggas' heads in. Rizzo deal with these niggas, he beat their heads in. They would say stuff like that to my sister. She told one of the women, she said, well, you got grandchildren and stuff. She said, you better hope that Rizzo's Gestapo squad don't beat your son, your grandson's head in. You know what I mean? Well, she had to say it to her in such a firm way, Brother Ellen Richard, for her to get their attention. They realized the severity of what she was saying. You understand what I'm saying? And when she said it like that, then the woman kind of got it kind of brought it back to some of the reality. I mean, you know, you talk some beating niggas' heads. What makes your grandson's head going to be spared, you know? Sure, we all want to deal with the crime issue. We want to deal with, but like you said, Brother Elliot, and you said it at the beginning of the program, these handkerchief-head Negroes and misleadership, whether it be from the mayor, the police commissioner, the transit police commissioner, they dealing with this thing not holistically, but from the wrong standpoint. It's not going to solve. You can bring the National Guard in. They could kill a few black, several black men. They could do it. But like you say, if you're not going to put a Marshall Plan in place, like Brother Marcus said too, they try to deal with this situation. Will you try to put things in place that can keep these brothers and sisters from committing crimes and stuff? Give, like you say, have, you know, we can have programs where a black woman can be home with her children if she's a single mom. She ain't got to work in two or three jobs. You know what I'm saying? Because like you said, but nobody's talked about it. You're a South Philadelphia, Elliot. Nobody talks about when they close Bach. That was, Elliot, that was a devastating impact on the black community because it left just one technical school in Philadelphia, and that's Adabas and stuff, man. When you close back, you had children that was going to learn auto mechanics, carpentry, whatever, you know what I mean, where they could make a decent trade for their life because, you know, everybody's not going to college. I mean, if you become a carpenter or electrician or auto mechanic, you can make damn good money, and especially if you get in some of these unions and stuff. We had union benefits and stuff, man. People good paying jobs, and yet these handkerchief head Negroes in this city, they're so pro, you know, stop and frisk, so pro, you know, bringing in the police and National Guard. If they would have been using that same energy, Brother Ellen Richard, to keep a school like Doc Tech open, imagine the crime that could have been that could have been stopped and stuff, man, because these young black men would have had something to look forward to instead of engaging in drug dealing and all kind of self-destructive things. They could have been learning the trade where they could make good money welding, whatever. You know what I'm saying, Elliot and Richard? You know?
Richard went to box, so
So, I mean, they dropped the ball on it and stuff. Because I've said this on the terrestrial radio station. I said, these black elected officials, they're so gung-ho about the law enforcement, they should use that same energy to create some kind of, you know, resources, trade schools, whatever, that can get these young black men off these corners and get them a sense of hopelessness and give them that sense of hopelessness and despair as they do about this pro, you know, public safety or pro law enforcement agenda. Something could be done, but them niggas don't do that. They're so busy running around here, you know, like you said, placating white folks, whether it be Anglo-Saxons, Jews, whatever. I mean, like you said, that the debacle that took place last night in D.C., that was a joke, man, you know. And I say a couple more things, and I get off. When you played the clip of the black minister that was talking to the reporter and stuff, like you said, you know, he said, well, you know, people dying over there, and this president just sitting around, you know, playing footsie while babies, like, and Richard said it to him a few minutes ago, hospitals being bombed, killing women and children and babies and infants, man. Come on, man. And where's your, and I've been beating this drum, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on the terrestrial radio station, and sometimes I'll be like on an island by myself, but I don't give a damn because I'm going to stand up and continue to use my voice to speak out on what I know is right and what I know is wrong. And I don't care about being called an anti-Semite or a Jew hater or whatever. They can say all that stuff all they want. I'm going to continue to call these people out. And I'm saying, so where's black people's moral compass, man? How can y'all, and I've seen this repeatedly on this back, and even some of the hosts say, Brother Joe, you're not out there by yourself. Many people in the black radio audience, the terrestrial radio station, agree with you. I said, well, that's good to know. I said, but if they didn't, I'm going to still stay my peace. I said, because where's our moral compass at? That, man, that you sitting there supporting a president that can sit there and be complicit in genocide. And like you said, Brother Elliot, earlier, that bullshitting game that he playing, well, we told not you to stop. So now we got to drop food over there. Man, stop all this BS, man. If you wanted them to stop, they will stop. You know what I mean? Because you control their purse strings. All you got to do is say, put the sanctions on them or whatever, and that stuff will stop today. But you playing games, man. Why you winking at Netanyahu, your thug friend, who, by the way, he's been his friend for 40 years. And like you said, like, them silly Negroes clapping last night. Not only was he has been friends with them racists like Eastman and Strom Thurmond, his political mentors, them white racists that was Biden's mentors, but Netanyahu, him and that bigot, that Jew Nazi, been friends for over 40 years. And people going back when Biden was a senator and stuff, man. Him and Netanyahu go way back. His buddy BB. You know what I mean? So a lot of our people don't know these things about this guy, man. You know what I mean? But for them same niggas, oh, they'll tell you about Trump. Oh yeah, well Trump this that he's a racist. He piled around with white supremacists. What the hell you think Biden was piled around with? Boy Scouts? I mean, come on, man. Stop all this nonsense with these people, man. Neither one of them ain't worth a damn. Like I told the brother on the radio the other day, I wouldn't vote for neither one of these bums and stuff, man. Like I said, and I say two things, and I'm off. Like I said, I have to live with this decision. I can't change from what I did back 4 years ago, but I can tell you it won't happen again. Like I said, I let my emotions get the best of me, and I got caught up in the lesser two. Even I voted for this creep that's in the office now and stuff when he ran against Trump 4 years, but that won't happen again. I'm not never before in my years on this earth remain at Ellen Richard whatever vote for the lesser two evils. I got caught up in that 4 years ago, but that's not happening again. I went against my own principles as a Muslim, because in the Quran it states clearly it's no degrees of evil. Either it's evil or it's righteous. No, it's no in-betweens. So it's lesser two evils. That's what's going to keep our people in trouble, as long as we keep on listening to these handkerchief-haired black radio hosts and these black politicians who are on that Democrat plantation with this lesser two evils. Okay, whether it's the Bible, the Quran, the Torah, and no hope, no book of God talks about no lesser evil. Either it's evil or it's good. It's only in between. You know, that's like saying a woman, Elliot and Richard, is either she's pregnant or she's not. She's not a little pregnant, but she's pregnant or she's not pregnant. You know what I mean? It's no in between there. You know what I mean? So we need to stop this nonsense with these people, because all it does, like you said, Elliot, is keep our people in a morass. And last point, Elliot, with that clip you played with that Negro Langley, he was being grilled by a member of Congress. Was that member of Congress black or white, Alex? I can't even remember.
No, he was white. In fact, he was at the Republican Geithes.
Wow, that was Matt Geithes?
Yeah.
Now Matt Geithes is a cold-blooded bigot to the max, but he was grilling this joker, man. And I'm saying to myself, why don't our black elected officials, why wouldn't they grill a person like him? I mean, if I didn't know no better, I would have thought Geithes was black the way he was grilling this Negro, man. I mean, he was grilling this behind, man, and stuff, man. Langley is a disgrace and stuff, man. I mean, again, like you said, like, the pow pounds got to stop. People like him, Lloyd Austin, Greenfield Thomas. You know, we should have learned our lesson back from Condoleezza Rice and Susan Rice. You had on black terrestrial radio station, oh, they black women and they chant for them. Never mind the fact that they over there, you know, overthrowing leadership, killing people with these, you know, authorizing drone attacks and all kinds of stuff. So like you said, we got to stop this cheerleading pom-pom, because these people, they might be black in skin color, like you say, Elliot, but they dangerous, man. We got to stop supporting these people just because they black, because they got these Ketanji Brown. Like I said, she went along with the so-called liberal, like Malcolm Stout, liberal friends. They went and voted 9-0 for Trump the other day. Now, again, if there was any kind of decent people, they would have still got it anyway, 5-4. But like you said, Elliot, show some symbol that if Trump is the bad demon that you say he is, you still could have voted, the four liberals could have voted 5-4 as a symbolism to say, well, look, even though we know we overrule, we just want the American people to know that we against Trump, so we vote 5-4. You know, we're going to lose by that one vote. But they went in our vote 9-0. What signal do that says to black people, the American people, but especially black people in particular? You know what I mean? Like I said, we got to be honest, like you said, and start calling these things out, man, because if we don't, we're going to continually stay in this dreadful condition we're in and stuff. We start calling these Negroes out, and like you said, put the pom-poms away and start calling these Negroes out. Like you said, mix that 4 more years and all these clowns, they clapping everything that old fart saying last night, and he ain't said a damn thing about what are you going to do for black people? Like Malcolm say, you put them first, they put you last. The nonsense got to stop at some point, Elliot. Thanks, man. I'll end right there, Brother Elliot. Put me on mute, and I'll listen to the rest of the show.
Thanks for your contribution.
You're welcome.
All right, take care now.
Richard, you know, I played that clip with Langley. Was it last week? No, it was the 29th. Well, that was last week. The 29th was last Thursday. Lloyd Austin was in front of Congress and they was asking him questions. They was asking several different things about, you know, him being sick and not saying anything and about this war. Let me play a little segment on what he said in reference to when he was being asked about this war. He wasn't as he didn't pretend to be as non-informed as Langley, but here's what Austin said. I hope this is the right one.
I am very humbly asking if you could chip in $5, $10, or even $25.
Let me clip this crap.
Mr. Okay. Secretary, about how many Palestinian women and children have been killed by Israel since October 7th?
It's over 25,000.
Mr. Secretary, last week, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights warned that any transfer of weapon or ammunition to Israel violates international law. About how many precision-guided munitions has the United States given Israel since the beginning of the war?
I don't have that number at my fingertips, but we have endeavored
to... Mr. Secretary, it's about 21,000 precision-guided munitions to Israel since the start of the war. Secretary Austin, last week you spoke to Defense Minister Gallant, and you said clearly there needs to be a plan to ensure the safety and support of those sheltering in Rafah before any military operations proceed. National Security Advisor Sullivan has said he has not seen any plan yet. John Kirby said it would be a disaster to invade Rafah. If Netanyahu defies the United States and invades Rafah, will you commit today that you will halt any future military sales to Israel?
Obviously, sir, that's a presidential decision. But, you know, we expect that, and by the way, I spoke to Minister Gallant last night. And I expect that when we provide munitions to allies and partners, that they'll use them in a responsible way.
But would you make a commitment that they've defied what we're saying and they violate international law, by the way, which is opposed to National Security Memorandum 18 and national...
Wait a minute, Richard. I'm going to play the rest of this. Wait a minute. When we provide munitions to allies, they'll use them in a responsible way. What? When you provide missiles or guns, they're using them to kill. What kind of reason? What is he doing? Okay, let me finish this out.
The National Security Memorandum 18 and National Security Memorandum 20, that if they don't do what we're saying, that we would halt those arms sales or transfers.
Again, the decision to halt the provision of security assistance would not be mine. It would be...
What would you recommend?
Well, I certainly, again, I really do expect that that they utilize the weapons that we provide them in a responsible way, and then if they
For time purposes, it seems to me if they're defying what you're telling them, what Kirby's telling them, what Sullivan's telling them, that wouldn't be responsible. Cindy McCain, the head of the World Food Program, has said that the Palestinian children are starving. Extremist settler Stormrich, Israel's finance minister, stopped American flour, which our taxpayers paid for, to get into Gaza. If Israel again ever stops American-paid aid from getting into Gaza, will you commit to not sending future arms sales?
Again, that's not my decision. I would number one, do what I've been doing and engage the leadership and encourage them to ensure that humanitarian assistance is getting...
Mr. Secretary, I would just say, and I have one more question, that we need some consequences when another country is defying you, defying the National Security Advisor, defying the President, defying National Security Memorandum 20. There has to be some consequence. And then I was surprised John Kirby said that Israel is taking more precautions than the U.S. military would to protect civilian life. Mr. Austin... Secretary Austin, isn't that statement inaccurate given Israel has used hundreds of 22,000-pound dumb bombs when there were no place for civilians to go? Would the U.S. government ever target terrorists with 2,000-pound bombs in a densely populated area?
Well, it depends on the situation. And again...
But have we done that? Use 45% of bombs that are unguided or a 2,000-pound bomb? I mean, do you really think that the Israeli government is taking more precautions than the United States military would?
I think, you know, just based upon the results in terms of the significant loss of life.
Gentleman's time has expired. Chair, and I recognize the gentleman from Wisconsin, Mr. Gallagher. Mr. Gallagher.
Richard.
And, you know, it's painful to listen to these, you know, like these military guys. It reminds me of Colin Powell in relationship to what Saddam Hussein, right, when he got caught up in promoting or trying to protect a policy initiative that, you know, he wasn't in agreement with or didn't even recognize that, you know, that he was supporting something that he shouldn't be supporting or he personally wouldn't support. To hear, you know, I mean, the questions were valid. And under the time constraint, they, you know, the response, but to hear trying to defend something, even when you're asked, well, what is your, okay, yes, that's the president's decision. What is your view?
What would you do? Yeah, exactly.
And you get caught up in trying not to give your view. And you're there as the highest officer that should have a view, have a public view of this kind of activity. And then to say, would America, as a military move, create this kind of action and still getting caught up again, like it depends on the circumstances.
And but
that's not a response.
But it's a strategy. These Europeans are putting black voices in these spots. Greenfield, Austin, Langley, Meeks. Putting them in these spots where the world gives the perception that you're on board with this. And I'm talking about the masses of black people. When we just read that the masses of black people, 27% of them nationwide live in poverty. Wait a minute. Now, that was Austin. Here's Greenfield a week before backing the same policy that Langley. Well, they wasn't talking about Langley and Gaza with that Gaza thing. They was talking about him in Africa. But what Austin was trying to defend, here she is at the UN. The
United States is working on a hostage deal between Israel and Hamas, along with Egypt and Qatar. This hostage deal would bring an immediate and sustained period of calm to Gaza for at least 6 weeks. And from there, we could take the time to build a more enduring peace. President Biden has had multiple calls in recent days with Prime Minister Netanyahu, as well as the leaders of Egypt and Qatar, to push this deal forward. And though gaps remain, the key elements are on the table so that if an arrangement is reached, it would help create the conditions for sustainable cessation of hostilities, which I know all of us would like to see. Of course, we want this deal to happen as soon as possible, as is shown by our exhaustive efforts. But sometimes hard diplomacy takes more time than any of us might like. Believe me, I understand the desire for the Council to act urgently, to positively shape the situation in line with the Security Council's mandate. Still, that desire cannot blind us to the reality of the situation on the ground. It cannot come at the expense of undermining the only, and let me repeat, the only path available towards a longer, durable peace. And that is why you've heard me say over and over again, any action this council takes right now should help, not hinder these sensitive and ongoing negotiations. And we believe that the resolution on the table right now would, in fact, negatively impact those negotiations. Demanding an immediate, unconditional ceasefire without an agreement requiring Hamas to release the hostages will not bring about a durable peace. Instead, it could extend the fighting. between Hamas and Israel. Extend the hostages' time in captivity, an experience described by former hostages as hell. And extend the dire humanitarian crisis Palestinians are facing in Gaza. None of us want...
Richard, you see that what she's saying is basically the same thing. Now, since mm-hmm. then, since you said that, you can see that that so-called agreement fell through.
Right.
So the weapons keep going over, the support keeps happening, and folks are dying. So, and their faces are the ones that everybody's looking at.
It's something.
The few minutes we have left, let me try to grab one more. Let's go here. Let's go to Great Britain. Yes, sir.
London, England. How you doing?
Okay. All right. Yeah. You. Thanks for the correction. I don't know how I slipped and said that. Go ahead.
That's okay. That's fine. You know, Brother Elliot, I don't want to sound patronizing at all because that's not my intention. But I was listening. I was on the way. I had to go to the airport. My daughter's flying out in the morning to Greece. And I was listening on the way. And so interesting. You know, I don't really watch that. I've never watched it before, State of the Union address. I haven't really paid much attention, or I don't even realize if they've shown it. But I think they showed it on the BBC. Well, they showed it on the BBC. And I wasn't sure how long it was going. It started late. But I just decided to watch it to find out if I could learn anything. And I was absolutely appalled by when Joe Biden turned around and said, "Some came here in chains." I was trying to work that out. I mean, what did he mean, "Some came here in chains," after he was trying to put over that, you know, all these different groups which entered America, we're all one, and then saying, "But some," you know, I addressed this morning on the Carl Nelson show. And at the end of the show, a caller rang in and he said that he knew some people would have that, take that view. And that's not what he meant, right?
Wait a minute, somebody tried to defend it?
Listen, this is what I'm saying to you. And you know what? I'm just going to show you something here. I listened to you a good while, Brother Elliot. Yeah, I listened to you a good while, you know, before I rang in, got in touch. And one of the reasons why, what made me get in touch, because I said to myself, when I was listening to you, I concluded in my mind that you have a view which is, how do I explain it? It's like, to me, it was coming across that you're not compartmentalized, because part of our education, and you in America, us in the West, we get compartmentalized, meaning they make it difficult for us to think outside of our parameters of our education / indoctrination. So when you talk to people, they only give you what's within their constraints. They can't think out of that, and America is very good at that. So, you know, don't disrespect, even when I was in America, when you speak to people and you mention names, many names like we know internationally, because when you watch the BBC here, they talk of the world. They talk about the world service they have. So they're constantly telling you about, so you get familiar with these people. But when I was in America, I was, you know, like for those times, Gaddafi, I talk about Gaddafi. They did have a hell who Gaddafi was. That was very shocking to me that they did not understand nothing what was going on outside America. But then I realized this is what's being done, you know. And when I was listening to you before I rang in, you had that kind of worldly view. And, it, you know, it was interesting to me. You know, I heard you talk about people outside Africa, and you knew who the leaders were, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when this brother phoned in this morning, and he's, like you say, he's defending it, the first thing he says is, that's not what he means. As if to suggest that he knows what he means, meaning that, is he in his mind, as he has a conversation with him? Because it was clear to me what he meant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was absolutely clear what he meant. Yeah?
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely, right? And then he went on to say, to clarify his position, he said, he's not talking about me. And then he said, he's not talking about you, Carl. We didn't come here in chains. Then I thought to myself, what the hell are you talking about, brother? And then this is the most shocking point. Look, brother, I'm born in England, London, England. Yeah, I'm born here, but I am an African man. And now let me tell you why I'm African. When I came up, I get called nigger, wog. Go back to Africa. Go back to the jungle. All these things. These white people are telling me. We didn't come from no jungle. There's no jungle in Jamaica where my parents come from. But that's what they were telling me. Go back to Africa. Go back to the jungle. You understand? So as I grew up and start to understand my brother, I get to understand there's just one common plan. They see us all the same. It don't matter if you're in America. It don't matter. They're going to tell you about going back to the jungle. They're going to tell you about going back to Africa. Because that's how you see you. You understand? It's only we don't see ourselves that way. You know, we see ourselves by the labels they put on us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a crazy thing, really, when you really think about it, you know. So the man this morning says to me, he says, that man in England, he don't even see me as his brother. This is the crazy where we're at. And I listen to him. I don't blame him. He don't see me. If I'm in America, and I've been there many times, spent time there, I got family there. Nobody knows I'm not American until I open my mouth. Nobody knows. The police will approach me the same. I've had it. And when I open my mouth, they look at me strange. And they say, where are you from? Europe. And that's a funny thing in itself. Because nobody I grew up with says we're from Europe. No one, you don't hear that talk. You hear that in America. But you, when I'm here, no one's going to say you're from Europe. They say you're from England. They're from England. They're not from Europe. They're from England. And they are very nationalistic. So it's interesting to me how people see different people. And they think, they know, oh, you're from Europe. They don't see themselves as that. They see themselves where they're from. They feed themselves if they're from England. I'm from England. You tell them they're European. No, I'm saying I'm English or I'm German or I'm French. Yeah. So the point I'm trying to make here is the ultimate confusion we're under. And it's there. It's there. And it's here as well. And it's everywhere we're at. We're under ultimate confusion. How are you going to defend a man who's just insulted you? And I love what you said, Baba, Brother Elliot, because you hit the nail on the head. He is demonstrating that to the world. And I don't think people see what he just done there. Oh, man. I was wondering, does he have a speechwriter? Because I don't know if these things are prepared for him. If he had a speechwriter, that means they thought about it. Because someone sat down and wrote that out and specifically put that in. Why they dropped that in is to just demoralize the people. And then, like you said, I'm watching this thing, yeah? And then I'm watching these people, these black people, supposedly educated or in authority, leaders or whatever you want to call them, clapping like some porch monkeys and shaking his head. I'm thinking, did not none of them hear what that man just said? He's talking about you. You came here in chains. He's just put you all into nothing but some. I with my Irish heritage, I came here from the famine. But you all came here in chains. You understand? That was so disrespectful. And even more, like you rightfully said, he's saying that to the world. And I don't think people get it. Saying that. So, you know, I know how certain people feel about hip-hop. I grew up in hip-hop. Hip-hop's my thing. And I understand what people say. And people blame hip-hop for a lot of things. But, you know, in truth, these people are very clever. in how they perceive your message to the world. Like, I hear people say, oh, it's because of hip-hop why people come in and disrespect her. Man, I don't agree with that. I think it's because of their mass manipulating media and their politicians who put this message and sold this message around the world. When you talk about they come in your communities and they put business, who's giving them the authority? It's the same people. Same people giving them the authority to over you, calling you. You come here in chains. What? That was so... Even when you were saying it, I felt it in my stomach. That's so disrespectful. Look, the brother defended it. And I thought to myself, and I might even go back on the show and tell him, if I imagine he would have said, and those who were escaping the gas chambers. Imagine he would have said that. Came here. Those who escaped. You think there would be outcry? Everyone would be jumping up and down and said he could have chose better words and that's disrespectful. What do you mean they came here running from the gas chambers? But there's no word for us. We're there for not radio stations to defend him. Defend him. Man, you know, this is not picking out one person because trust me, Barbara Elliott, this madness is all over. The same madness I'm watching there is the same madness here. And it's so crazy. It's unbelievable. Because how far are we moving? Are we, with all this access to information, we don't seem to be waiting. These people can come live and talk to the world and tell the world, oh, yeah, but these people are here. They just came in chains. Chains, you know. Sure. Brother, you know, you do a fantastic... you know, and it's not to patronize, you do a fantastic, and your perception is absolutely on point because these things are not accidental. They use social scientists for these operations. They're psyopses. It's not, he go on there like he don't know what he's talking about. I'm sure speechwriter wrote that for him, and, you know, I may be wrong, but if he did, these things are planned.
Oh, yeah.
Understand.
Now he might ad lib during the course of the speech, but that was his big wind up. If you see where that so you know all of that certainly that stuff is written in.
Right. So the point I'm trying to make is it's deliberate, and these are the games they play. And the point you made, which was profound, and I don't know if a lot of people got it, is that he's saying it to the world. They're doing it. Look at me. I'm not important, man. But this is where they're at, and this is where we're at. That's what he's saying. This is what he's... That's the damage he's doing. That's the damage they're doing. And it's a planned and structured thing. Looking at the other side and making jokes. And you know where the camera went? The camera went on the Republicans, laughing with him, all laughing. Ha, 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 ha. So they're all in it together. Ha, ha, ha. That's where the camera went. That's what I'm watching. This is a joke, man. They got people like Joe, and we better wake up. We better wake up because they have no good intention for none of us, not just you in America. They have no good intentions for none of us. And if we don't wake up, man, he might be right. We might be back in chains. But just keep up the good work and keep the fire burning because trust me, sometimes without these sort of platforms and people like yourself and others, boy, sanity would be a thing we just running and chasing, man. Take care.
Thanks for your contribution. Let me grab one more before we leave. Caller. Philly.
Yes, sir. Quickly, peace and blessings. I just wanted to say that what I heard about the Palestinian situation, Minister Farrakhan mentioned that it savors the 2024 lecture that about the United Nations being worthless and useless, you know, especially when it comes, you know, when it comes to black folks and black nations, you know, they don't act on nothing. But if you look at Ukraine, they allowed America to give money or whatever, but when it comes to black nations, they're useless, worthless. And then he talked about Netanyahu having a heart of a beast to continue for 75 years, and now the just slaughter him like that and don't even kick, don't feel nothing. He's like that king of Babylon, Nechem, that's a hard word to pronounce, Nechem Bakazizer, whatever his name is. But he was the king of Babylon. He was so evil that God turned his human heart and gave him a heart of the beast. That's what Netanyahu is. He's like the modern king of Babylon. And that's all I can have to say.
Hey, brother, thanks for your contribution.
All right. Thank you. All right. Great show.
Peace.
All right.
Brothers and sisters, before we leave tonight, look forward to Sunday at 7 o'clock tomorrow from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with Dr. Janine James as host. And then Sunday, Time for an Awakening is back from 7 until, with some exciting guests planned. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on his path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. Oh,
children to save the children.